हरि ओ
Power to create, Brahma admits, is derived from the Lord's original creative energy. In fact, Brahma himself is a creation of the Lord, whose transcendental form exists eternally beyond the three modes of nature. At the same time, the Lord accepts the service of these modes so that the material world may be created, maintained, and destroyed. Like the sky, the Lord gives shelter to the modes, which, like the currents of air, combine in all kinds of direct and indirect ways. Yet, like the sky, the Lord is never affected by the currents of the energy he supports. The individual soul is a tiny offshoot of the Lord's personal spiritual nature. Like the Lord, he too is transcendental to matter, but the jiva is not the Lord. Hence, the play of the three modes of material nature may influence him. In particular, if ignorance influences him to misuse his minute free will, in an attempt to control and enjoy material nature as an imitation lord, he is put by Maya under the conditions of cause and effect. All she is doing is granting the jiva his desire, seeming independence. But what the soul gets from that grant is not really what he expected. Maya's rule obliges him to own the results of his activities. There is no escape from whatever karmic reactions, pleasant or painful, he deserves. Engrossed in forgetfulness, mad after sense gratification, and distressed by material pangs, such souls lose their sense of the constant presence of the Lord, which means that they lose sense of all that is truly auspicious in this world. So here, lose the sense of the constant presence, because the Lord is always present.
Yes.
Right? That's what we're bringing out when we're dealing here in this level of Bhagavatam. Is there's no such thing as the Lord not being present. We have the tendency as though we're here and then the Lord's there, or it's about whether we are perceiving. But the point is the Lord's independent. Devotional service is independent. It's technically got nothing to do with us. Right? It's not that we're the cause. We can be involved. We can, by the Lord's mercy, we can get the benefit of that association. So that's what we're looking for. But it's the ignorance, right? The Lord's independent. He engages the modes to make the creation work. But the living entities, because we're small, we get controlled by it, right? And that's just because of our desire. So does that make sense? So if we change that desire, we won't be controlled by matter. Because the point is one spark of reality is greater than an unlimited amount, or I say, a vast amount of, I say, ignorance. Does that make sense? That's the point.
So that's a lot of ignorance.
That's a lot of ignorance, yeah. But the point is the soul is more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
See, is that the whole material phenomena cannot actually control the jiva. It's because the jiva's interested. That's how it becomes control. Because it looks nice, but then you get tangled up in it. It's not that you can just sit there and look at it, and okay, it's nice, and pick and choose as you like. No, you get involved in it. That's what she says. You do the activity, you get controlled by it. Maya controls it. That's just the way it works. So, in the reflective, it's bad because then you're forgetting Krishna. Now, on this, on the transcendental side, then you become attracted by serving Krishna, working under the internal potency. Then you become controlled by the internal potency. It's not a problem. Because we're so small, we have to come under the shelter of superior energies. It's just the way we are. We are too small to function on our own. It means we have independence that's suitable for our size. So we won't feel, I'm not independent. Right? In the spiritual world, everybody feels, you know, that they have the freedom to do as they need to do. Right? But the difference is that there you're under the internal potency, so it works. Well, here, then the problem is being under the external potency. One is bound by those activities. In other words, if you perform an activity in pure devotional service that pleases Krishna, what's the result?
More devotional service.
More devotional service.
You're
happy.
Liberating.
Huh?
Liberating.
Yes, all these different things. Are these a problem?
No.
But you're controlled by those.
Yes.
Right? You're getting the results of your activity. You have to own them. Yeah? Does that make sense? Yeah. So all this happening is the reverse is happening because of ignorance. Mm. So it's getting the results in the reverse. That's all. So it's not that it's unfair. It's very fair. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? That's all. It's just that one's working in the wrong direction because of ignorance. That's all.
So what we mean is it's unfair I'm not God.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. That things don't go the way. That I'm not the controller and enjoyer. Yeah. Yeah. So. That's all. You had something?
So, Maharaj, we can assume that in the moment we try to control, we straight away being controlled in material world by Maya?
Yes. That's how it works. You want to control, you're controlled. It's just, how does the relationship work? You control the person, but to control the person, you have to be controlled by the person. Right? If it's not both ways, it's called exploitation. But when it's both ways, then that's called a relationship. So if you want to have a relationship with Maya, you'll be controlled by Maya. Just that her control doesn't end up so great. Yes?
No, the reverse here is just to get energy control of the internal energy. Yeah.
Yes, but the point is we are controlled by it, so we use our independence to function within internal potency. Just like we're using our independence to function within external potency. So our independence is that we're functioning within it. It's not, we don't have independence to function without it. Right? We have to function under a greater energy. But the independence is which one and what details within that one. Does that make sense? Like Mother Jashoda is doing all her things. The coward girls are doing another thing. The cows are doing something different from that. Right? You know, we don't hear, you know, when no one's looking, Mother Shoda gets down on all fours and moves, you know. I always wanted to do that, you know. Like, you know, so it's not happening. You know? Is that? Yeah? Yeah. Okay. This means they lose sense of all that is truly auspicious in this world, because the dead matter is not what's auspicious. It is Brahman, so of course it's not technically inauspicious. But what's Brahman? Right? Brahman is transcendence. Where is that? What is the source of that transcendence? Krishna. So therefore the auspiciousness is the connection to Krishna. So by ignorance you forget the connection. Therefore you forget or lose the sense of what is actually auspicious. And if you're not dealing in auspicious, then what do you get? Inauspicious. Yeah. Right? You understand? You get one or the other. So that you either have money or you don't. Yeah. So it's not, you know, it's light or it's
Dark,
yeah. So that's how it works. So it's either auspicious, means it's connected to the Lord, or it's not connected to the Lord, it's inauspicious.
Yes. So when we look at auspiciousness in connection with Dharma, technically that could be seen as inauspicious.
From the position of when you get technical, in 11th Canto Bhagavatam, it'll be seen like that. Because, I mean, that's where it's explained. From here, it's already, this is why we're dealing with the universal form, because why deal with the universal form? Then we see is everything that we're dealing with is actually connected to the Lord. The potency of everything we're dealing with is the Lord. Anything you catches your attention, what's caught your attention is the Lord.
Yes.
Like that. But we identify it with, through our particular conditioning, therefore our particular senses and what they are, have an ability to be aware of, that's what caught our attention. Now the sense is only able to tell the thing. You can't. It doesn't appreciate the potency. Just like you're watching the blender. Okay, can you actually appreciate? I mean, directly from the sense, the current. You understand? No. You can see effect, but you can't actually get that. That's the point. The senses can't actually perceive God. But they can perceive the medium through which God is manifest. Yes.
I was just thinking about the Visarga, that's also explained as Krishna, because in grammar you can't see it. You can see the effect of it in the writing.
Yes.
But in the end you can see it. If it comes at the end of a sentence, it's actually put there.
Yeah.
So in the final conclusion there is Krishna, but when you see it in the world, you can only see the effect of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Does that make sense? Because you're writing something. We discussed that, I don't know, some time back, about words when it came down to, when they get over this fighting over words. But the point is until you finish the word, you don't know what it means. So it's not that the word itself is potent on its own. Mm. It's that when it's finished, then it's able to be empowered by the Lord's potency. Then you can. There's cognition that you can understand what the word meant. Does that make sense? So that's the point. So it's not the letters. It's not the sound vibration. It's the Lord's potency that makes it work. So you have the how you say. You could say the secondary aspect, how the Lord as Brahman is pervading everything. And even that we're not perceiving. But then when that is connected to, you see it connected to the Lord in a favorable way for the Lord's happiness, right? Without the karma and jnana, then you get, it becomes empowered by the bhakti shakti. You understand? Because existence is the Lord. That's what we're saying. The Lord is existence. Because he is, therefore everything else is. Yeah, I guess you'd have to say, we is what he is. Right? Yes. Yes. Yes.
It means technically we will never be able to see the Lord or perceive unless we get a spiritual body?
No, it means when you touch the internal potency. Because the point is it's not that the eyes are seeing God, these material senses, right? Like that. They're seeing form, but the Lord, by his mercy, allows us to see. Just like the universal form. Arjuna would not be able to see that, so Krishna had to give him divine eyes. Otherwise, means bring somebody off the street into the temple, take him into the temple room. What do they see?
Statues.
Yeah, that's the whole point. So that's what the eyes can see. But when, that's why it says, when the eyes are then covered with the salve of love, then you can see the Lord. So it's he allows you to see him. Because the point is he is the stone anyway. The hardness of the stone, the ability that it can be carved, the shininess of the stone, that's all him anyway. But then we have that devotional element that you see beyond. Does that make sense? So in other words, as Brahman, he pervades everything, therefore we can perceive it. But it's only when it's imbued with bhakti, then or we're imbued, then we can see reality.
So it means if we don't see reality, initiation means we're not getting the mercy, we're not imbued with devotional service?
Depends upon how you're applying this.
Straightforward.
But I mean, what does that mean? Are we out there walking on some back dusty roads away from civilization with a cat of nine tails and flogging ourselves? That's what I'm asking. So, I mean, where are you applying this? He says, straightforward, yeah. So I say, what does this mean? You know what I'm saying? Because in other words, this is what we're studying, these subtleties of this. Yeah. But you have to give a context, because there's something in your mind.
Yeah, probably.
Okay, yeah.
Like, it's easy to see the Lord in the temple.
Yes, that's why these things are done. We're easy to see the Lord in the temple, in the deity, in his name, in the Dham, in the devotees, Bhagavatam, Tulsi, Prashad, like this, right? You know.
Straightforward.
Yeah. So that's there. So everything else is indirect because we have to judge it in connection with the qualities that are there in the material energy that we're aware of. Does that make sense? Like the house. You know, so how do we see Krishna in the house?
Protection.
Protection. Yes, protection, security, or
facility.
The whole point is this, but facility means that you have something. Facility means of the Chaturvyuha, whose facility?
Sankarsha.
Yeah, so then in other words, that's there. Security, right? You know, your house, you know, is part of identity. You understand? You know, that over there, oh, the guys with that kind of house. You know? In a sense, it becomes part of the... So all those things is that because Sankarshan is there, then we have the facility, then there's Prajumna, Aniruddha, and Vasudeva. You understand? That's why it's a mistake thinking, I created the facility, therefore I'm finished with my duty. But then, yes, okay, then your duty as far as generating it, but if you want a relationship, you have to interact based on it. You understand? So that's the common ground is having the facility. But the one view is that I've generated the facility, work is done. The other is until facility is utilized, then there's no benefit. You understand? So one is looking at it from existence, one is looking at it from, you know, utility. Does that make sense? So until the two meet at the common utilization of the facility, there's no relationship. You understand? Yeah. Does that make sense? So, because of that extra step, that's why it's called indirect. Mm. You understand? The holy name is direct. All we have to do is remove the ignorance. But we don't have to go through anything more. It is Krishna. Just if we listen, we're aware, then we're aware of Krishna. But even if we're not, we're directly in contact. But with the house, we connect it to Krishna, then it's connected. And if we don't connect it to Krishna, then that ignorance is separating us because we think it's the material energy that is the security. But it's the universal form that's the security. Does that make sense? So that's the difference. That's why it's got that extra step. That's why it's called indirect. But Krishna is mentioning in Chatur Shlokis that directly or indirectly you should look for him up to this, you know, at all times, all places, all circumstances. So that means it can be done. That's the thing. This idea is that, well, you know, oh, we can't be so finite. No, but then the point is the businessman, okay, let's say he goes, whatever environment he's in, And say he goes to a new environment. What's he looking at?
How to make money.
He may go for a vacation. He's walking down the, you know, some little, you know, alley in Morocco and all that. But he notices things, right? And next thing you know, he's got a business. You know, I saw some, there were some Marwari guys. They were sitting on the train. You know, this is back before the airplanes were there. So they're just sitting on the train. And the train is stuck. There's a bridge washed out. And they're sitting there. And they're bored. Like that. Right? They're just sitting there, really dead. This guy selling Gur Badam walks by. Right? And he's got junk in Gur Badam, like that. And he's walking by. He walks by. And he goes, how did he go through it? He says, 3 rupees. Or something. Yeah, he says, 3 rupees a pack. And that the Marwari guy is sitting there just lifeless, comes to life, and in like one moment says, okay, 2 for this or 4 for that. You know, in other words, he took it from 12 rupees for 4 down to 10 rupees for 4. Or, you know, or, you know, how is it 6.5 for 5.5 for 2. And the guy just looked at him and just handed him 4. And it was just so fast. The guy, and then he's sitting there trying to get his, you know, hey, you want to go? What are they going to do with that, Ms. Gourmandon? Right? It was him and like 2 friends. Like that, you know, so it's way more than they're going to eat. But it was just some way to, you know, deal with money and get some benefit, just like immediate. You know, so that's the whole point, is that anyway we're looking anywhere for everything. Right? Okay. You know, or another example is you have the, you know, teenage, you know, high school cheerleader. What in every situation, what is she looking at? People will notice her, what's the fashion, what are people wearing, that's all she'll see. Right? So that's the point, is any way we're doing this. So this idea is, oh no, this is so hard. All it is that we're so conditioned to, from ignorance, to not do this in connection with the Lord. But we're doing it anyway, because all we're perceiving is the Lord anyway. There's no such thing as not being God conscious. Every living entity is God conscious. But it's just a matter of, due to ignorance, they don't know it. Yes?
But it means in this, we have to first stop and analyze what we're doing, when it's indirect, and then try to connect that.
Yes.
Unless it becomes automatic.
Yeah. If you do it by practice, then it will just come nicely. But in the beginning, one has to analyze. But as is mentioned by Krishna, you only have to analyze the areas of your own values, your own attachments. You don't have to analyze others unless your values come in contact with them. Right? Because that's the thing, it's unlimited, the qualities, but so which ones do you look at? You just look at the ones that you value. Right? In other words, in this example, the Marwari simply has to look at how money is God. You know, not like, you know, he's got a dollar sign up there and when they start in their board meeting, they all get up and, you know,
they sit there. You want the arts?
Yeah,
they have their own mantra in God with us.
Yes. Yeah, notice it's only on the bill, it's not on anything else.
Right.
It's not like down at the police station or, you know, city hall. No, it's on the money. We trust we'll keep this viable. was it legal tender? Yes.
Oh.
Yes. It will remain, by God's grace, it will remain legal tender. So that's the thing, is that it's this ignorance. That's it. That's why he says if he comes under ignorance, right? If he's in goodness without ignorance, it's not a problem. The problem is it's ignorance that is the material element, that it draws one away. So cultivating goodness draws you towards the spiritual world. Cultivating ignorance draws you into the material world. That's the thing. But just goodness is not enough. It has to be applied with devotion. So in other words, activities in goodness are the favorable for spiritual, because they're the closest. Right? Things in ignorance, then they're great for entangling yourself in the material world. They can be connected to the Lord, but they're not the ideal, because they're the one that's farther away. Yes.
It seems like sometimes it's easier to preach to people in ignorance because they can see the difference. Sometimes mode of goodness, they're quite comfortable. They don't really think they need anything.
Oh, it depends.
Like
well, that would be if there's some passion.
Okay.
If they're actual goodness, then they can see it, you know.
Okay.
And if they're actual ignorance, then they'll also have a problem.
Yeah, okay.
You know what I'm saying? So, but the point is it's just a matter of seeing what's the benefit.
Mm.
People want to benefit themselves.
Mm.
You show how God consciousness will benefit them.
Mm.
Then there's an interest.
How about pious Indian families that think they're already doing it?
They're the ones that you keep walking. But in other words, you have programs that they'll come to, but don't put focus there.
Mm.
Mm. Because they already figure they're doing everything.
Yeah.
You find those ones that have an appreciation, cultivate them. And naturally, the other ones, by regularly coming over the years to the, you know, Janmashtami and the big programs and taking a shot, eventually they'll start to become serious. Even if they don't, the children or the grandchildren, somebody will become like that. Because they have this illusion they'll get the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
Right. So, and then the next generation thinks they're not going to bother with the Indian world, but they're going to get benefit from the Western world. And then the generation after that, then they kind of figure out that, you know, it's not really working, and there's an interest in roots. So, you know, it works good. So you just go with what's working. Yes.
So, in the discussion we were having about the home and directing.
Yes.
So the doubt was, is it possible to have a direct application of bhakti at home and still keep a balance in the sense of, because I've seen people who are extremely direct with the families kind of and economics and...
That's the point is as long, no, if the economics is not so solid but the family's solid, then there's not a problem. But if the economics is not solid and the family's not solid, then they're not applying the process well enough. The point is if you can keep it up and somehow or another stick to the direct activities long enough, you can go back to Godhead. Because the point is, you remember Krishna at the time of death, you go back to Godhead. So that's not a problem, really. But the problem is that how much discussions when devotees get together and want to improve, you know, the society, the discussions are social. And not even... you know, technically varnashram application social, just downright down home, mundane, you know, middle class Western social. So what does that mean? That means if you don't engage it, that will catch you. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole thing. Maya's good. You know. Kind of like, you know, you have this monster bear trap there, and she takes some, how you say, little like some nice, you know, pink or purple, like fur, and puts it on the edge of the thing, and then in the middle puts a nice little like flower or something like that. You
know? Ooh, nice.
It looks great, you know, cute. And it doesn't matter. As soon as you stick your finger, you know, that's mine. It doesn't matter. That's why she has the covering and then throw it. So she covers. That's why you don't notice. She covers until you're so covered you won't notice when she throws you. See, it's just like if you took the jiva in the human body and immediately put him in a pig's body, he'd go, hey, what's this? You know? But you cover him first. Then when you put him in the pig's body, he goes, nice. Does that make sense? So that's how she does it. So she covers with ignorance.
So the real social discussion should be a philosophical discussion.
It should be. There isn't anything else. Then once, if that's established, that's accepted, then you can get into practical detail. But that practical detail will always be in line with the philosophy. So this idea that practical is one thing, philosophy is another, that means that they're not that thoughtful. Because as we mentioned yesterday, even in the material platform, when you're dealing with the top, anybody in the top of their area, they're non-different. You know, it's just like, let's say, you have, you have these companies that make, let's say, organic products. So now, if you go and talk to the guys that started the company, what are you going to hear? Practical stuff or philosophy?
Practical. They're going to talk about why they did what they did.
But what's why they did what they did? Is that philosophy or that's practical?
Okay.
It's a philosophy. In other words, they're the ones that can practically apply it. So they see both. The guys in the company, they know a few phrases, you know. Not tested on animals, or, you know, like that. But what that means, they don't really know or probably even care. There's a few that do, and a lot that don't. Right? And then there's guys that just talk philosophy. They don't have a company. So the point is when the two of them, when the two of them are understood in their balance, you have both. You know, it's like that with everything. You know, so the practical guys, it drives them nuts. You know, it's like, what is it, you know, Mr. Jobs. Like that, because he was on an ideology. So he drove the people that were just into making money nuts. So they got rid of him. And then they stopped making money, so they had to bring him back. You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is you have the ideal. So you're saying the quantum physicist, it's a philosophy if you're on the top. You know, everything, you're on the top. It's a philosophy. Anybody in music, it's a philosophy. Anybody, whatever their field, it's a philosophy. So the thing is not being accustomed to dealing with philosophy to apply the practical means they're not accustomed to dealing with the top. That's all. When they say, oh, we're just being practical, yes, it means you're used to dealing with the bottom. You're not used to dealing with the top. But it means it has to be practical. Because when it goes to apply, Kshatriya Vaishya, if it doesn't work, they're not going to buy it. Like that. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. Is that? But because it's Veda, the Brahman knows it works, though maybe he can't explain how to apply it. But he has that faith it does work. Therefore, hearing from them is still valuable. But then you have to take it and analyze it and apply it yourself. Now, if they can apply it, help you apply it, that's better. You know, it just makes it easier. But the point is there's no such thing as practical without philosophy. It means tattva has rasa. Rasa is, it means, if you define the rasa, it's called tattva. If you apply tattva, it's called rasa. Right? So in other words, the philosophy has culture. The two go together. You can't separate them. That's the difficulty with the Protestant concept. It's there's no culture. It's so-called some kind of philosophy. But because there's no culture, there's no philosophy. Back when there was more culture, there was more philosophy. Now when there's less culture, there's less philosophy. You can't separate them. You know, they're, as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur called, they're two, the moiety, right? Inseparable two paths. They go together.
I was thinking about this the other day, and everything you do has an action, and an action is culture. So, and to do something, you need to have philosophy. You believe in that action that you did, so you can't.
You can't separate. That's why I said a gentleman means he's educated. And education doesn't mean just an occupation. It means in the lifestyle. So even if someone has a simple occupation, but they're cultured in behavior, they'll still be called a gentleman. While the person who may be academically very developed, if he doesn't know how to behave, he's not called a gentleman. You know, he may be successful, but he's not a gentleman. So it's not seen in the higher level. You know, so if we look at, you know, ideologies, you know, let's say a cultured, you know, like street sweeper will consider it a better position than, you know, a really rich guy who can't behave properly with anybody and therefore no one likes. So that's the whole thing. So that culture is taken for granted. That's the difficulty, is that it's inherent. But the problem is that inherency has, it's forgotten how it develops. It's inherent and that's what's desired, but that inherency doesn't come without training. So the modern, you know, system of education has lost that training. They talk about it. They want everybody to behave, but they don't have a system to get them to behave other than fear. Right? Because that's all their religion offers. You respect God because of fear. You don't, there's that little thunderbolt that will come along and there'll be this little pile of ash on the sidewalk.
That's called behavior management.
Behavior management. Yeah, there's other euphemistic terms. Ethnic cleansing. How you say, that's the famous one. Is work is freedom.
Work will set you free.
Work will set you free.
Ah, right, macht frei.
Yeah, freedom. What? That's another thing.
Freedom from all contamination.
Yes, yes. In a sense, these are just euphemisms, because they don't have, all it is how to instill fear that people don't get bent out of shape that you're instilling fear. That's all. So the point is it's not actually, what do you call it? Behavioral management?
Behavior management.
It's not actual behavioral management, because what's behavior? So they're taking a behavior of an animal, so you're managing that, but what about, you know, the behavior of the human? They can't train that. They don't know it, because being an animal, they don't know. You know, could a dog teach a cat how to climb a tree? No, come on, get the claws out, you know, come on, yeah, pull, yeah, you know, it's not gonna happen.
He can motivate.
Yeah, yeah. Get that bird. You see that bird? Be the bird. You are the bird. For a second time, Brahma recounts. Okay. So he, however, means the Lord, never forgets his parts and parcels, even when it is time for the cause of manifestation to be destroyed. He carefully keeps the jivas near by merging them into his own spiritual body. Right? So the Lord never forgets. That's why this whole manifestation is here. The manifestation is there so he can come and perform his pastimes and reclaim the fallen souls. That's the whole point of it. But the problem is not that many are interested. So they spend a long time distracted by the carnival.
Yes. Yeah.
For a second time, Brahma recounts for Narada the Lord's acts of creation.
Why the second time?
Why the second person? The primary. Here it says in greater, not going into greater detail. Because always when you present something, you're going to give an overview that doesn't really necessarily, if you don't know about it, you don't understand how it works. But you see all the elements. So, because the first aspect of Sankarshan, what are all the elements? And the second one is you show, you know, connections and basic things. Third, you get into exact detail. Like that. So you always have these three layers. So he's given that overview. Now he's giving the second one. He's giving more detail. And then, according to question, then you get into finer detail. Yes? No? No, that was... Chetan. Oh, you heard the word carnival.
Yeah, that's all.
Now going into greater detail, he speaks of Hiranyagarbha, the Purusha avatar who fathers Brahma. Because before he just mentioned about the Lord and then him and that his powers from there. So it's a very, very basic. Now he's getting into, you know, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu and how that works. Also named Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, Hiranyagarbha and Narayana, the Ayana or resting place of the Naras or living entities. This form of the Lord, Prajumna of the Chaturvyuha, is the cause of the gigantic Virat Rupa manifestation. Meditation upon the Virat helps a jiva understand that in any material situation, He is ever related to the cause of all causes. That's the whole point, is that whatever the situation, if a soul can perfect that relationship before quitting the human form of life, he is invited by the Lord to leave the material sky of temporary planets, including Brahma's own, and to join him in the spiritual sky of transcendental planets. Here play the eternal, all-knowing, and completely blissful internal potencies of the kingdom of God. So that's the whole thing, is that we're going to relate to the Lord through his energies. It's just a matter of whether you want to see him directly or you want to see him with the covering of illusion. Because all this is also Krishna, but we're, through illusion, where it's covered, we don't see him. The spiritual world, we see him. Everything reminds us of him. Right? We see him and everything else reminds us. Here, we don't see him and everything makes us forget. Right? Yes?
Maharaj, so this cover, it's on our side. It's not that Tom or material nature is covered. No. But we have our own covering.
We're covered means it's not technically even ours, so we can't even claim the covering's ours. Okay. I was getting something here. So my ignorance here, excuse my ignorance.
So those are the modes of nature?
Those are the modes of nature, the modes cover. In other words, it is material energy, but it's carrying the Lord's potency. Right? So in other words, there's a form of energy that carries these other aspects of his energy and qualities. Right? So in other words, the form is able to be a medium for the energy of activity of that form, and the therefore manifestation of the quality that is gained through that activity and form. Does that make sense? All that. So here it's made out of dead matter, and the spiritual world is made out of internal potency. Does that make sense? So you have all those elements there. So same here is, now if we look at this in goodness, then we'll be functioning on a higher platform than if we're looking at ignorance. If it's just, you know, it's just bricks, or it's just something there, or it's just something not to bump into. You know, but if we see it as, you know, part of a building or part of something for improvement or part of our duties, you know, or taking it farther, now we see it as the Lord's energies and all these things. We start to get into the metaphysics, then it takes it further. Right? But if we see it as the Lord's energies, and it's the Lord, and it's all being done to please him. In other words, Maya is doing all this to please the Lord. This is her devotional service. Right? So it can't be that far from him, because this is her devotional service. We're trying to separately enjoy her devotional service. You know, it's just like the cooks in the kitchen trying to cook something for Krishna, and somebody else on the side go, wow, hey, that looks good. You know, how long can it be finished? You know, it's kind of like, hey, get out of here. You know, so that's what's happening. So that's why the reciprocation is so strong by Maya, because you're trying to enjoy her service.
In the Dhamma, the cover is thinner, right? So that's why it's easier.
It's thinner, but it's not that it's not there. But the point is the Dhamma being Chintamani, so that means wish fulfilling, it can be as thick as you like. So that's the whole point. Or it can be as thin as you like. So that's the point. It's up to you. How you know, in other words, when you go to the temple for Darshan Arti, what are you looking for? You know, is it association of the deities or is it gossip? So thick thin. That's the thing. In the beginning stage of sadhana, then you have both. You know, you light the darshan, the deity, and then somebody walks by and, oh, hey, you know, I haven't seen them, but where have they been? You know, so that's the whole. Does that make sense? So you have all these mixed elements. You know, and then someone goes, hey, you know, and then you go off for, you know, Charinamrita, you know, like this. So you get it both. So the idea is that you're going to get the maximum opportunity to take part in direct activities that you might not do at your home. You might do, you might not do. You know, so it's that's there. So it's a little more obvious, you know. So that's why it's afforded, because it gives that opportunity. So those who are comfortable in that all the time, then it's said here, they're invited to the spiritual sky. And those that are not so interested, then hey, we're already here.
Whatever you want.
You don't have to worry. But, if no one else, it's not that there's an alternative place to go. It's that you'll be sent somewhere else. I'm so unqualified, I don't even make it in the material world. It's not somebody else. Everybody here is qualified, so everyone can have that confidence and self-esteem that, yes, I belong here. Okay. Yeah. Shloka Nisharana. Summary of verses. Verses 1 to 8. Srila Narad Muni inquires from Lord Brahma. Verses 9 to 31. Lord Brahma glorifies the Supreme Lord and describes the creation. Verses 32 to 34. The Lord enters each universe and each body. So how that... So is that he means, in other words, he's entered as the soul of the universe, as Garbhadakshaya, and the soul of the individual, as Kiradakshaya. But he's the soul of the material, as Mahatattva, as Karanadakshaya. Right? So Karanadakshaya, he is, by his glance, that primary creation is done. But Garbhadakshaya, he's what manifests the universal form. How that and the spiritual potencies mix. Means how it works, that the Brahman and the energies, what are the forms that'll work. Then you have the application of that through the demigods and the modes of nature and everything, so that it functions. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Verses 1 to 8. Srila Narad Muni inquires from Lord Brahma. In reply to Maharaj Parikit, Sukadeva Goswami narrates how Narad Muni humbly approached Brahmadev. At the lotus feet of his Gurudev, Narada's wish is for personal instruction in Atma-Tattva, the truth of the individual soul and the super-soul. Right? Because Atma means us in the way of the body, the mind, the intelligence, and then our consciousness is the soul. But Atma also includes the supreme soul. Right, and then the relationship of all other souls, then the Lord's, and then because it's the supreme soul has its energies of which we are one. So then all so from there everything comes. If you understand Atma, then you understand everything. Right? It's not to understand Atma means I understand myself. Nowadays, it's interesting. Even though, let's say in the yoga circuit, there's an interest in this Atma Tattva, but it's about themselves, right? It's just about what I'm going to get from the peace I'll get, not by actually knowing who I am and what I should be doing. They don't want to know that much.
No.
Yes. Can we say that all those questions from previous chapter and this, are they all about Atma Tattva?
Yeah. It means everything we discuss is always about Atma Tattva. But it's just various aspects. So depending upon that, then we discuss it as creation, or as the science of rasa, or how the modes of nature or that. But it's all technically Atma Tattva. It becomes Atma Tattva because you're connecting all of that to Krishna. When knowledge is connected to the Lord, that becomes Atma Tattva. Instead of directly replying to the three questions Maharaj Parikit asked in the previous chapter, Sukadeva Goswami refers the king to the inquiry Narad submitted before Brahmadev about the truth of the individual soul and the supersoul. Narada asked many sub-questions about the material world, its background, its creation, and its maintenance. In his submission, Narada already suggests the philosophy of Achintaveda-Veda-Tattva, by employing the example of a spider, the creator, and the web, the creation. The web has no source other than the spider. In a sense, then, spider and web are one. In another sense, this example sustains the functional difference between spider and web, right? Because there's visesha, there's the uniqueness, right? So the uniqueness is in application, right? The commonality is then in the philosophy, in the tattva. Right, because they're the same substance. At the same time, as that same substance has uniqueness. Therefore, there's a difference. Right?
Yes.
So then this part, this is what you call spider, this is what you call web. But the web is non-different than the spider. It came from the spider. And the spider, how do you identify there's a spider around? There's a web. Yeah, right. So that's the whole thing, is that you know the Lord's there because of His energies. And the Lord's, you know, so because there's the Lord, there is energy. You can see the energy, that means you know there's the Lord. So that's the point of the non-difference. The web has no source other than the spider. In a sense, then, spider and web are one. In another sense, the example sustains the functional difference between spider and web. Right? So you get the one, the difference, and the simultaneous one and difference. Right? So that's the... Narada's final questions are for Brahma himself. My father, do you create with your own energy? Do you have the help of others? Is there a creator more powerful than you? For how else am I to understand your performances of severe austerities as if pleasing another, right? In other words, unless he just does that for fun, you know. But, you know, generally one wouldn't think of that as fun, you know. You know, yeah, it's getting boring. Yeah, let's do something interesting. Yeah, what should we do? Hey, why don't we sit down and do some austerities? You know? Yeah, that sounds great. Sounds fun. Yeah, so how was your weekend? Oh, great, we did austerity.
Oh, man.
Yeah, yeah, so it's generally not the it's generally not the Monday morning conversation. Right?
Only if you're competing.
Hmm?
Only if you're competing.
Oh, yeah, okay, who can be more austere? Oh, we stood on our toes. Yeah, but we stood outside on the hot sun. No, but I stood there on my toes next to my mother-in-law. Yeah,
yeah, on and on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So then, he inquires by Narad Muni. Okay. Srila Prabhupada 1-8. Srila Prabhupada explains that the existence of the world implies the existence of a cause, right? Because by Achinta Beta Beta Tattva, there has to be. If there's energy, there has to be energetic. That's where the physicist is making a mistake. How is there energy if there's not energetic? Because the point is, why is energy only transforming? It doesn't disappear. It only does that when it's connected to energetic.
Yes.
Disconnect the current from the generator, and is it just goes on transforming?
No.
No, it stops. So that's the point, that energy exists means there must be an energetic. So this idea there can only be creation and not creator, it's not scientific.
No.
It's not the nature of
it. Prabhupada points such an obvious example, how it's a generator in the line. Everybody can understand that, but when you transfer to supreme energetic, then it's
like that with anything. You know, like I said, you know, the person is really careful on how tight, you know, in what order and how tight he puts the lug nuts on the tire. Right, that, very careful. But when he goes home, he's not careful on how, you know, he deals at home. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. He inquires by Narad Muni on the basis of factual cause and effect appear very reasonable. The atheist, however, put forward many self-made theories without any touch of cause and effect. So that's the point, is that they're only talking about effect. But you don't have effect without cause. It's not scientific. Right. The manifested world, as well as the spirit soul, is still unexplained by the godless atheists through the medium of experimental knowledge, although they have put forward many theories manufactured by their fertile brains. Contrary to such mental speculative theories of creation, however, Narad Muni wanted to know all the facts of creation in truth and not by theories. You know, he wants to know actually what's going on, because you can see there's more, yes.
Could it be that they're embarrassed because they can't understand how the energetic is self-manifested? they want to be able to say that everything has a cause. Well, what
but,
about
but,
the
but
cause?
Yes, everything that's energy has a cause. But that's the point, is the shaktas. That's why when we define, you know, we'll get into the Brahma Samhita, when you get into the Panchopasana, the five different main deities in the Vedic thing, they deal with the five levels of consciousness. So shakti is the lowest. That's anamoy. That's where scientists are placed, because it's through the senses. So in other words, a nuclear physicist is just a really... intellectual and expensive baby. You know what I'm saying? The other baby, you get them, you know, some little thing, it costs, you know, 15 euros. This one, it costs 150 million euros for his little, you know, thing to send atoms around in a circle. But otherwise, it's the same thing. They say everything, you know, goes like, you know, they catch something and they have to put it into their, through their senses, into the little thing. That's all. And they almost have about the same motor skills. You know, dressing ability, eating ability, social ability.
Pretty much the same.
Some of them a little more. I met one that kind of could dress and interact. But he's connected with yoga, so that's probably what we're...
Babies are more cute.
Sorry?
Babies are more cute.
Yes, babies are more cute.
Way more.
That's the one thing you could say about this. Yeah, absolutely not cute at all. Absolutely not cute. Yeah, that's a good point. Good point. People take the babies. Yes.
Yeah, that's why.
How many people take
many more babies than
people? Yeah, yeah. Okay, continuing on 42. Transcendental knowledge regarding the soul and the supersoul, which includes knowledge of the phenomenal world and the basis of its creation. In the phenomenal world, three things are factually observed by any intelligent man: the living beings, the manifest world, and the ultimate control over them. The intelligent man can see that neither the living entity nor the phenomenal world are creations by of chance. The symmetry of the creation and its regulative actions and reactions suggest the plan of an intelligent brain behind them. And by genuine inquiry, one may find out the ultimate cause with the help of one who knows them factually. Right? So in other words, one should understand it is there. So the aspect of intelligent design, that's just normal to see it that way. To come up with an atheistic plan and reject that, then that's basically non-scientific. That's a subjective view, because the objective would be, it's all running so perfect. Why is there science? It's already going on. It's not that scientists create science. They observe science. So, and we say, and why are they considered intellectuals? Simply because they've observed science. So that means then who's created the science must also be quite smart.
Pretty good, yeah.
Yeah. You know, so it's you can't have chance and science. They don't go together. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, that's the whole difficulty that plagues the scientists, is, as we mentioned, the aspect of probabilities, how, what it can do, what will happen, what will be the reaction. That freaks them out, because they don't want those things. But the point is it's there. But it always reacts in a certain way. So what does that mean? There's a science. Does that make sense? So it's just natural that they don't want to deal with that kind of elements of relationship. Because then that's the personal. And so being atheistic is impersonal.
So if you're dealing with scientists, which actually is not only interested in the speculative thing of going on and on, he wants... accept some conclusion. What would be the strategy to bring him to this?
It just means, in other words, what's going to be described in this chapter is what you can describe to them. You might use it more in terms of the Brahman, or Supreme Brahman, which is the supreme potency. But the point is there has to be these higher energies. But the mechanics of what goes on here is the way that they're thinking. The way they think, it's not necessarily they're thinking like this. But it's in the realm. It's not foreign to them. Yes.
I would just like to hear you speak about Prabhupada's very he liked to call Krishna consciousness a great science.
Yes.
And you know, it doesn't fit the same paradigm as the modern scientific, you know, idea.
Because theirs isn't scientific.
Right. So that's I'd just why. Like to hear you say something about that. I'd just like to hear that.
No, if you're looking at science, means you one would have to agree that because being an empirical system, that it's based on their observation through their senses of the material phenomena. Mm-hmm. Right? That much you would have to say, everyone in the academy would have to agree with that. Right? Right? That's how they got. So some of them are newer elements in the academy, like, you know, what do you call it, social anthropology, you know, and figuring out why the kid down the street, you know, got a machine gun, you know, as opposed to, you know, older things, you know, physics and other things that go back for a bit more time. So all it is observation of what's already there. So then, as we see, is that one must see is that there's the individual, then there is the material energy, and both of them, if you couldn't, how can you have social anthropology unless people act in a certain pattern? Right? How can you have all the natural sciences unless there's pattern? How would you have meteorology? Why is the person could sit there and point at the board and says, yes, up here in Birmingham, then we're going to have, you know, it's going to get, you know, how you say, hell's going to freeze over here, and, you know, stuff like that. You know, how does this happen? It's because it's a science. Right? So they've observed. So that's the point, is that there's this regular. So why is that? That's the third thing, that if they're really scientific, then they'll have to accept that something happening not because of chance, because of science, means that there must be intelligence.
Yes.
So now, if you're studying all of those things together and what's its origin and all that, why wouldn't that be a science? Just because you didn't observe it with the senses, but it came down because it's beyond what you can deal with the senses. Because even within these fields, it's not that they could observe it with their senses, and they can only observe part. They can say they're being scientific, but just look at the statistics. What's the term? They must have a fancy term for it, the guinea pigs?
Test subjects.
Yeah, test subjects. Yes, I'm saying the euphemisms are great. Yeah.
Takes the abuse out of it.
Yes, test subject. It's like some of these things are done with, you know, 100 people, 1,000 people. There's 7 billion on the planet. You know? So, I mean, so basically they're dealing with theorems. That's what they're dealing with. So even if we work from their point, is then if we were a theorem, can they prove that there's not God? No. So therefore, as a scientific theorem, it stands as one of the major, you know, elements of consideration, because you have the individual, you have the energy itself, and you have the cause of that. You know? So therefore, and we can say, well, we can't say for the whole thing, but it says you can't say for anything the whole thing. So it's, you know, how much of the planet did, you know, Leakey look at? You know, he sits there with his little, you know, paintbrush and doing away dust in some one little place in Africa, maybe another little place in Africa. You know, the physicist is looking at, how many atoms is he looking at? You know, like that, the social anthropologist, how many people are they looking at? So that's the thing, is they're only looking at a small amount. So even if we say we're only, just in this example, that example, we can see, but you can't come up with an example to disprove it. Therefore, it's a bona fide theorem. You know what I'm saying? Even from their point of view. But why we explain it is because it's a science, because it's all coming from one creator, therefore the consistency of it, then knowing knowing the knowledge of that creation and its interaction and results, that's science.
Correct. Yeah, Prabhupada in the introduction to Bhagavad Gita says, real knowledge is understanding this material world, spirit, and the controller of it.
Yes. Achit Ishwara. That's what all the acharyas deal with. Because that's sambandha. the living entity, God, the material energy. That's Sambandha. Then Abhideya is then the process that you use to elevate yourself. And Prayojan is the result gained having applied your process. What's your relationship with the Supreme having applied your process?
And karma is just an extension of the third law of physics. That every action has equal and opposite reaction.
That's all. But it functions on all planes. It's not just physical. It also happens on the emotional, intellectual. It means to come up with a big theory means they had to put in a lot of contemplation. Mm. Right? It's not that the guy in the bathtub, you know, has come up with his result. You know, just he wasn't thinking about it, and then suddenly he got this great idea, and now he's running around the neighborhood, you know, shouting Eureka. You know, that the point is he's been thinking about this a long time. It just happened to get the realization when he was relaxing in the bathtub. There wasn't too many thoughts at once, so he was just kind of. So it's that is science. Chit means the living entity, God, and the creation. Because that's what he's pointing out here. Anybody with a brain can see that. Any intelligent man. The living entities, the manifest world, and the ultimate control over them. So that's where we start with the control. We just start from the Brahman platform. Like that. And then bring it up from there. But they have to at least accept the Brahman. Any scientist has to accept that. Now, whether they had the piety to go on to Paramatma or Bhagavan, that's another thing.
But how would they accept that?
There's a power running everything. That's Brahman. We call it Brahman. They have terms for it.
Design.
They have terms for it. Why is there consistent power? Why is it this pillar has power and that one also has power? Why do they all have power? You know, there's something pervading everything. So that's the whole thing. That's Brahman.
Genetics. Who gave the DNA its function, its blueprint to work and to design? And so you can go in any field.
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, because it just they start from the what do you call it? Protozoa, Mr. Protozoa there, and so maybe that's how they got Mrs. Right, because you have Mr. and Ms. And if you combine them, you get Mrs. So then the protozoa would have been Mrs. Right? So then the protozoa, but the DNA in the protozoa is just as developed as anything later. Where did that come from?
Right. Darwin didn't have the electronic microscope.
Yeah. So where is... Because if everything's supposed to develop, then there should be a development of DNA pattern that should be more developing. Mm-hmm. But it's not. It's the same thing. Mm-hmm. So the point is that it's just chit achit ishwara. This is science. So now how much of that? So that's why we're saying we're a complete science because we deal with all three. Mm-hmm. While they'll deal with living entity or with the material energy, like you know the soft sciences will deal with the living entity. The hard sciences deal with matter.
Measurement.
Yeah. Like that, because it's hard to measure people. How do you measure how crazy the guy is? You know, there's no crazy meter like that. There's a feeling, you know, like that.
How do you prove something's funny?
Yeah, like that. Yeah, of course. So that's the thing is that they don't know these sciences. So physicists will work in one, the others will work in the other. And basically very few work in, and then some of the religionists, you know, dabble about the Supreme. So they're all just dabbling in these. But the Vedic, it gives all three of them as a combined, complete unit. And because it's in its own category, therefore people just say, oh, it's just philosophy, or it's just this, or it's just theory, because it's beyond. It would be like if I plunked down the textbook for calculus, you know, in front of the kid who's still, you know, trying to figure out this rock and this rock, you know, if I put them next to each other, I have two rocks. Then it won't make any sense to them.
It'll just be theory.
It'll just be theory. That's all. That's what you're dealing with. It's not that it's not up to their standard. It's so far beyond their standard they can't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. It's not less. They try to, but to compensate. They try to make it look less. Because if you make something, you degrade something, then you naturally elevate yourself. That's the thing, you put yourself as superior, if you can find a fault. But in their own system, there's unlimited faults. So those who are honest can admit that, but they won't admit that outside their own discipline. Within their discipline, all it is faults. But outside the discipline, they're on the united front. So you have to deal with those who are on the top, because they see the whole thing, and they understand the weaknesses. So of those on the top who are actually interested, or let's just say anybody who actually wants to know, you can discuss with them. So that's the thing. If they don't want to know, it's a waste of time. You know, they may be an intelligent waste of time as opposed to a very wealthy waste of time or a very good-looking waste of time or, you know, a very socially well-situated waste of time. But the point is whatever their piety, it's a waste of time if they're not actually interested in the Supreme in some way or another. So that's the whole. Does that work? Yeah? Yeah, okay.
Okay. Okay.
The intelligent man can see that neither the living entity nor the phenomenal world are creations of chance. The symmetry of creationist regulative actions and reactions suggests the plan of an intelligent brain behind them. And by genuine inquiry, one may find out the ultimate cause with the help of one who knows them factually. So you always have to go through a mentor. That's the thing. That's just how the, you know, intellectual field works. Without a mentor, you don't really progress much. You always have to have. So here is that one who knows them factually means in the parampara. The problem in the modern academy is the parampara only goes back a certain amount of time and then ends. You know, each discipline has its beginning. But with the Vedic academy, then there is no beginning. Right? Because the beginning is God. So then it comes down from there. Then it works. Okay. Verses 9 to 31. Lord Brahma glorifies the Supreme Lord and describes the creation. In this section, Brahma states that his respectable position as a powerful authority is meaningful only because he is able to see into the prowess of the Almighty Personality of Godhead. Right? So see into means that Shastra Chakshas. He can see through what the Shastras describe. That's what he can see. He reveals that the source of his creative power is the effulgence that shines forth from the Lord's spiritual form. Brahma glorifies Lord Vasudeva, whose divine energy expands as the primary elements of creation. Right. So when we're talking about this aspect of Brahman, we're talking about it as Parabrahman. We're never talking about it as the way the monists talk about it. Right? So the term's the same, but just because people misuse a term, there's no need for us to not use it. Right? If it's standard of our line, we don't wear it. Just like you see, Prabhupada always uses the word cult. Mm-hmm. Just because people use it badly, who cares? But cult means cultivation. Right? Because you're cultivating something, you're taking something and nourishing it. Right? So where it's applicable, use that. You'll also use nourishment. You know, so they'll use these different terms. So it doesn't matter. But terms that aren't necessarily important to us, then if they've been used badly, then we drop them. We don't worry about that. Does that make sense? Brahmaji, being so questioned by Naraji, congratulates him, for it is usual for the devotees to become very enthusiastic whenever they are questioned concerning the Almighty Personality of Godhead. This is the sign of the pure devotee of the Lord. Because then you have an opportunity to discuss. Because it's always about hearing, chanting, and remembering. So if there's a good question, then you can hear, chant, and remember. In his reply, worthy of the foremost Brahmana in the universe. Brahma tells Narada that the avidya, the souls ignorant of Krishna, who depend upon their frog-like little brains and imperfect senses for knowledge, wrongly conclude that another jiva like them in the role of a demigod of creation or some other powerful position can have full authority over material nature. But when we were discussing that before about the adiatmic, adidaivik, adibhautik. Right, so adiatmic, there's us. There's the adidaivik, means how it's managed. But then there's the, the adibhautik, the demigods, they're managing it because they're just like us. They're just another jiva. Right, so the difference between them and us is adiatmic and adibhautik. It's just who's in which position. It's the Vishesha. Because otherwise, Indra and, you know, the dog in the street, then are not different as far as the soul is concerned, the adiatmic. Only on the adibhautik, then you see one's controlling and one's being controlled. But the adidaivik is the Lord, who's beyond. So that's the thing, that's what Brahma sees. He's able to see according to this adiatmic, adidaivik, adibhautik. While the general living entity doesn't. He thinks that the adibhautik is actually the adidaivik. Mm-hmm. Right? In this example, right? Because these three can be applied in so many ways, depending on the field. But in this example, they think that the demigod is the adidaivik. Right? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do that again. Adibhautik.
Adibhautik means is the situation. Adiatmic is the individual, then there's the situation, and then there's who's the controller of that. So the demigod controls the situation, but Krishna controls the demigod. It means the potency of Indra to make it rain comes from Krishna. But Indra is in the position to make the rain happen. He uses Krishna's potency to cause rain. Does that make sense? So the point is before the creation, when you're in Mahat, all the jivas are all the same. So the jiva that will become Indra and the jiva that will become the dog, they're all there together. So you can't tell the difference. You can only tell the difference when there's the phenomenal creation, the secondary creation, and then this jiva is in Indra's body and this jiva is in the dog's body. And then being in these two bodies, then you can tell the difference. Then you can say, this is the adiatmic, that's the adibhautik. But the potency of the adibhautik comes from the adidaivik.
Right.
Does that make sense? Means the adiatmic, adibhautik, and adidaivik are a formula. We generally only bump into it when it comes to problems. Mm-hmm. Then the ones that come from our own mind, adiatmic, those that come from others, adibhautik, that what comes from the surroundings, the nature, the adidaivik, the demigods. But this formula is implied in all the aspects of creation. It's a common formula. We just know it from this one. But when we get into the creations that are coming up, this will be a major formula that's used.
Since everyone has free will, even demigods are sometimes misbehaved.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean you don't get a reaction for it.
Right.
Indra is misbehaved and he ends up hiding in a lotus stem in Manasarova while he's been chased by a tuberculosis personified.
But I mean, Indra, you might give trouble to someone like Vishwamitra. You know, he's getting a little worried.
Yes, but it doesn't mean he doesn't get reactions.
Right.
You know. But generally with them, it works out because, you know, the point is he's getting a reaction from Vishwamitra, so Vishwamitra's doing what he's doing and it's putting Indra in anxiety. You know what I'm saying? So in this way, Vishwamitra is the adibhautik for Indra's adiatmic anxiety. And then there's a demigod in control of anxiety, and so he's having fun with both. Yeah.
And then Indra sends medical.
Yeah, and it works for him. But let's say when he tries the same trick with Narayan Rishi or with Markandeya, it just doesn't work. And then he gets even more. You thought he was worried before. Now he really gets worried. You know, because the sages are more powerful than Indra. It's just that he's managing. So the problem is managers always tend to think that they're the top of the pile. They're never the top of the pile. Never was, never will be. Right? It means you have that power above, the teacher, the intellectual. That's the top of the pile. You know, and then on the top of that is Krishna. So it's always how it works. So that's a general tendency. So just like you see Kartavirya Arjuna, he takes a position as superior. You know, and the Lord works it out. You know, in a very, you know, directly demonstrable plan. Right? No? So then, that's there. Then they're convinced. But it's happening. Indra always does that. Even here, Krishna's there. He thinks he's just a kid. So then he tries to control. Then he figures out he's not. So that's why administration is always in the second position. Like that. It's just the way it is. It's been created like that. But the tendency is to always think you're in the first position. Does that make sense? So it just naturally happens. So they'll do something wrong, but it doesn't mean they won't get a reaction. Even if it's just in the form of his anxiety. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, a lightning bolt hits Indra and then he ends up as a pile of ashes. You know, and then the pile of ashes says, oh, did it again. Yeah. What's happening?
Even Yamaraj got cursed to take birth as Vidura.
Yeah, so the point is this, everybody has a free will, but it doesn't mean that they don't get reactions. Brahma has. Didn't mean he didn't get reactions. So on their plane, just being illusioned, that's heavy. Because on his platform, means the residents of his place, they're all personified Vedas. You know, so they're not an illusion. When, you know, when he dies, they all go to the spiritual world. You know, so for them to be illusion, that's already heavy reaction. So then Krishna just puts him in an illusion. So it's just a matter of according to their platform. You know, we always think of generally the grossest forms.
The mud is in the father of Brahma.
That's there, but that's
they the head of the Sampradaya.
But the point is yes, he's the head of the Sampradaya, but then who's the head of the head of the Sampradaya? So therefore, technically, they shouldn't have a problem with it. Because if Brahma's illusioned by Krishna, then what's the problem? Shiva is the same thing, he's the head of another Sampradaya, and Mohini Murthy's got him running all over all the ashrams. Right, you know, and Mohini's having a great time.
So
is
he?
Yeah, and afterwards he says that, you know, only Krishna could have done that. His wife can't do that. I mean, she's the total material energy. She can't do that. But Krishna can do that, so that means he's the most powerful. So that's two heads of Sampradayas. You know, so it's not a problem. I mean, we don't have a problem with it.
Leela.
Leela. But the point is even by Tattva, is Vishnu superior to Brahma and Shiva.
Right.
And the Madhvas will easily, readily agree with that.
That's an interesting point in South India when people, you know, are trying to position Shiva over Vishnu. They do it with the, you know, Ram worshipping the Lingam and all that.
Yeah, but that's just etiquette. It's just being nice. You know what I'm saying? It's just like the grandmother is going to say something, let's say, to the grandchild. So they may tell the their own child, says, you know, don't worry, I want to, you know, I'm going to take care of this. Or don't mind that I have to say something. Or, you know what I'm saying? So that's just etiquette. That's all. And it's one time. So that's
I was in Rameshwaram I thought it happened on the way over. I thought he was just basically saying, don't mind it. Robin stolen Sita. You know, he's your devotee. I'm going to go punish him now or something. It was one of those. But in the temple, they have both Sita and Ram worshipping the lingam on the way back.
Well, that's just naturally now they come back, and so now we've taken care of it. He's a devotee. It means Sada Shiva is non-different from Dharayan. And there is no difference, so technically he's just worshipping himself there. He's not worshipping the incarnation of the mode of ignorance, you know, which even there is his. He's worshipping higher than that, Sada Shiva. You know, so they always hang out, they're best friends. In Chaitanya Lila, as Advaita Acharya and Nityananda, are they good friends?
Sure.
Yeah, so that. And who puts who in the senior position? Who's senior, Nityananda or Advaita?
Oh, Advaita. Understands what he's dealing with.
Yeah, but the point is that's the Lila.
Right.
So that's how it works. It's always more fun. Who's senior, Krishna or Balaram?
In age, Balaram.
Yeah, but in culture and you know in the social system, it's Balaram. Right? But in Tattva, yeah. So that's the whole point. It's fun to do it that way. You know, it's just like you have the 3-year-old and you have the grandfather. Who's the horsey? Yeah, that's rasa. So that's all. It's just rasa.
Wouldn't work the other way around.
Yeah, it wouldn't really work the other way around. Come on, there, put some muscle into it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay, Brahma admits that he is able to create only after the Lord's creation by his personal effulgence, known as the Brahma Jyotir. Just as when the sun manifests its fire, the moon, the firmament, sun manifests its fire, the moon, the firmament, the influential planets, and the twinkling stars also manifest their brightness. Footnote 18. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Lord Brahma says, actually, I'm very insignificant. I manifest the universe, which is already manifest by the self-manifesting Lord. Like grinding what is already ground, just as the sun and other luminaries reveal what is already revealed by the Lord. The Shruti says, there the sun, the moon, the stars, fire, and lightning do not shine. They all shine only by following the shining Lord. This light illuminates all these. Katha Upanishad 5:15. Yeah. So it's because he's manifest, because Mahavishnu has glanced, then there's the separation of the energies, then you have Maha, right? And then that is being applied by Garbhodakshaya Vishnu into all the situations, and all that has been. And then Kiradakshaya Vishnu enters it all. So then that's why it works. So Brahma is only putting together what's there. It's like the, you know how you say it? You said, you know, these things you connect the dots and that. The dots are already there. All it is you can't see it. You know, does that make sense? You know, just like, let's say, for example, the artist, he puts up his canvas and he takes his pencil and he draws a few lines. What does he see? The finished product. What does everybody else see? A bunch of lines. You know, a bunch of pencil lines. So that's the difference. So Brahma only manifests it so you can see it. Then the artist paints it. So in this case, the same person is the primary creator and the secondary. Right? But in what he's pointing out, he's only dealing with the secondary. He just manifests what's already there. Right? It's does that make sense? Because we're taking it that, well, if the gross is not there, it's not there. But the gross comes and goes. You know, why is it every time they put together some, you know, pieces of wood or some cinder blocks or some bricks or some, you know, tin or something, we call it a house? Because the concept of house is already there. House existed before that building. House will exist after that building. And no matter how many you build, it's still house. Does that sound sense? Yes.
What are the gradations of souls?
Can gradations of souls.
Can we
you're
say
going mudwa on this.
Like those we mentioned in the sarga, there is no differentiation.
Yes.
In this sarga, there are.
Yes.
What's the gradation?
What is?
Can we say it's a gradation?
A gradation. You could say, or you could say it's a degradation.
Okay.
It's just so in other words, the soul is the same, it's just according to their conditioning then what position they'll be put into. So Indra means he's done the piety to be Indra, and the pig has done the piety to become a pig. You say, what do you mean? That's not pious. Well, it's better than being a worm in the stool. Right, you know?
Because you mean the stool only partial.
Right? Yes, you only partially do. Those guys is lock, stock, and barrel. Plus, the pig has eyes and can walk around and blink.
I figured out how to outdo Krishnadas Kaviraj's statement. I am lower than the stool of the worm in the stool. Anyway. But it's...
Yeah, but there's no need. The point is...
Prabhupada said to one disciple, he said, oh, Prabhupada, I am the most fallen. Prabhupada said, you're not the most anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's about following. The point is that the moods that they have, it's not that because we're farther in the line, it has to be greater. No, ours is lesser. As you go up, there's more and more. That means the one who feels themselves the most the servant of Krishna is Radharani. No one feels more a servant than her, even though she's the greatest. In fact, Rupa Goswami points out in Nectar Devotion, there's only one servant in the cosmos. That's her. Everyone else is her servant. So it's not that there's many servants, there's only one. So there's many servants of the servant. And so our position is servant of the servant. So, you know, we're the servant of the, you know, worm in stool here. Can relate to that?
Yes.
And so Brahma offers his obeisances to and meditates upon Vasudeva, Lord Sri Krishna, whose inconceivable potency, Maya Durjaya, influences the less intelligent to think of the dependent demigod or secondary creation as the independent supreme being. Right? So they're thinking of the Adi Bhautik as the Adi Daivik, and that's by his influence. By his potency, you have unlimited living entities thinking that there's no God, or that they're God, or someone else's God, but not God. That means, I mean, just think of this. How many very, very powerful, influential people, you know, celebrities or, well, say, whatever, does one know of that one doesn't know of?
Not many.
Not many. So what is the position of those who you don't know about them, though they're running everything? They're greater. Right? The celebrity just, you know, sits in their own backyard and the next day it's, you know, full-size page of the tabloid.
Yeah.
And they were sitting in their own yard, gates closed, nobody there. So how is it these other guys you never even see pictures of? Right. I guess if you're only 3 feet tall, you know, it's mostly when they take pictures of you below. Yeah. Either that or you were the lizard on the wall, right, when they took the picture. Whatever. So, does that make sense? So here, God is so powerful that he is everything, pervading everything. Everything's going on because of him, but no one knows him. That's power. So that's Brahma's pointing out, is that it's inconceivable potency. It's Maya Durjaya, right? Because she conquers everybody, even Brahma. Srila Prabhupada explains. Brahmaji is conscious of his actual position, and he knows how less intelligent persons, bewildered by the illusory energy of the Lord, whimsically accept anyone and everyone as God. A responsible person like Brahmaji refuses to be addressed as the Supreme Lord by his disciples or subordinates. But foolish people, praised by men of the nature of dogs, hogs, camels, and asses, feel flattered to be addressed as the Supreme Lord. Why such persons take pleasure in being addressed as God, or why such persons are addressed as God by foolish admirers, is explained in the following verse. So Brahmaji doesn't allow. So as soon as Narad comes and addresses them in that way, then he says no. Actually. Living entities absorbed in thoughts of "it is I" and "it is mine" are subjected to the influence of this illusory potency by which they forget Krishna. But Maya never takes precedence over the Lord's incontestable authority over all things great and small. Indeed, fomenting illusion is her service to Krishna. And so even though everybody is illusioned by it, she doesn't take credit for it. She always knows it's by the look, because she's just a potency. That's the point, is only the jiva is subject to illusion. The internal potency and the external potency aren't subject to illusion. They know who they are. And the liberated soul knows who they are. I remember there was one devotee that went into Prabhupada's room. He was there. It's just him and Prabhupada, and he's saying all these praises of Prabhupada, "You're this, you're that." Prabhupada just kind of looked at him and says, "I know who I am." You know, kind of like, you know, enough of this. Now get down to some practical service. You know, what are you going to do? They're not illusioned.
That's good.
When she comes into the presence of his purest of presences, she feels ashamed of that service. So she's comfortable when he's taking all these forms here. But when in the purest of purest means when he comes before that creation, in other words, he's not involved with the creation, then she feels embarrassed. Right? So then coming before Radha and Krishna, then she always feels it. She stays out of the way. So even when you have dhyanams, a very complete dhyanams, Maya's mentioned that she's just way out of the way. Like, you know, she's basically conspicuous by her absence. It means, yes.
Well, we actually say that Maya and Govamaya, the same person.
Yes.
Different office.
Yes.
But when it comes to Radha and Krishna, Maya is ashamed and Yogamaya is full into the pastimes. How is that possible?
Why not?
Same person? Pretty same.
Let's say you're there, something happened, and you're comfortable with it, you know, with another person, but then another group of persons thinks it's not good, and both of them are there at once. No, but you can't feel simultaneously ashamed and not ashamed. Yeah. So then... And she could expand as more than one form, so very easy. You know, you don't have to worry about it once.
No, I was curious, why would she do that? She does fabulous services, yoga minds, to take that role. Instead of being...
No, but it says whenever. When she comes into the presence of his purest of priests, when she comes into, it's not necessarily she's regularly there, but there are occasions. There are pastimes of the Puranas discuss, but it's not regular. So she's always there in the form of yoga. But there are occasions where she's there as Mama. Yeah. Okay, footnote 19. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, "Those who give respect and receive respect without reference to the Lord are bewildered by Maya, who is situated at the back of the Lord, beyond his vision. Knowing that she deceives, she is ashamed to stand in sight. Like a deceitful woman, she stands behind the Lord. Bewildered by her, people boast. Being situated behind the Lord also indicates she is not facing the Lord. Because she is not facing the Lord, her influence does not approach him at all. Because, you know, you can't stand behind somebody facing the person and have influence. You have to be standing behind the person and facing away from the person to have influence. Right? So because of that, you're not influencing the person behind you. So she has no... It's just another way of explaining how she thus has no influence over Krishna. So she stands at the back, so you don't see it. So standing in the front, that's Yogamaya. So as Mahamaya, she's standing at the back. That's why generally when the deity goes out, you never see the back of the deity. Beyond illusion, the truth is that the cosmic manifestation is not a material product. It is produced from the Brahma Jyoti, like vegetation is produced from soil, with Brahma acting as gardener. That's a nice example. So in other words, Brahman is there, and that's it has all the qualities. And because the qualities are there, that means all the principles of the potencies of the forms and activities are also there. So then, from this soil of Brahman, then Brahma, he simply gardens, and you get produced all these different forms. Does that make sense? In his purport to verse 11, Srila Prabhupada nicely sums up how the Supreme Lord empowers Brahmaji to serve him as the secondary creator. Lord Sri Krishna is ultimately the creator of the Brahma Jyoti, mentioned in this verse as Svarochisha, or the effulgence of the transcendental body of the Lord. This Brahma Jyoti is all-pervading, and all creation is made possible by his potential power. Therefore, the Vedic hymns declare that everything that exists is being sustained by Brahma Jyoti, Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma. So that's the point when it says everything is Brahma, is because it's all being supported by Brahman, by Krishna's effulgence. Because that's the existence. So that's there. But it being impersonal means it's generic. Impersonal doesn't mean it doesn't exist, or there aren't qualities. Impersonal means that they're generic. Then there's manifestation of specific, then that's where it becomes personal. Therefore, the potential seed of all creation is the Brahma Jyoti, and the same Brahma Jyoti, unlimited and unfathomed, is established by the Lord. Therefore, the Lord, Sri Krishna, is ultimately the supreme cause of all creation, Aham Sarvasya Prabhava. Because he's the basis of Brahman, because it's his effulgence. So if all existence here is based on Brahman, and he's the basis of Brahman, then that means he's the basis of the material world. Right? A equals B, B equals C, so A equals C. Right? So it's complete. It works all the way. But, yeah, sorry. But Brahman is not the basis of Krishna. Krishna is the basis of Brahman. The material world is not the basis of Brahman. Right? It's that makes sense.
Yeah.
So therefore, material nature cannot be in control of the basis of Krishna. So that would be a fallacy to look at it that way.
Am I right? When we try to look at the examples from the world to kind of prove our point, we're trying to reverse that thing. It's not that the world proves Krishna, but...
Yeah. No, we only use it as an analogy. That's why analogies have their limit. Okay. That's why you have to accept from authority, and by the Lord's mercy, then there's revelation. Mm-hmm. So it only is to bring you near, like that. It's not... It can't... The analogy actually isn't the knowledge. It only gives you an idea of something from what you're an experience... that you have an acceptance of that particular formula. Then you're applying the formula into a new area. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I was thinking, when we say Plato thinks very much the Vedas, therefore the Vedas have valid, but it's the opposite way. Because the Vedas have their valid, Plato saw a little bit of that.
Yeah. That's all. The point is knowledge is the Veda. So people, anybody that's real, is Veda, is speaking Veda. But they don't know it's Veda because they're an illusion. So they don't get the credit for that. But they get from the Brahman level that it functions, it works. But as far as self-realization, it won't help them. Because they're unaware of the self. They're unaware of Brahman and the jiva, so it won't work.
So like when they're seeing Krishna but not knowing they're seeing Krishna.
Yeah, like that. Oh, but see, the analogy is there to, you switch examples. Just like if I take grain, okay? Let's say I take wheat, okay? And I somehow know to combine it with sugar, okay? Will it be okay?
Yeah.
Okay? But now what form are we thinking?
Cooking.
Yeah, but cooking. But what generally, okay, cooking. But what form of cooking did we use?
Baking,
right? So generally we think of wheat and sugar in connection with baking. But now, what about a ravioli that inside is sweet? You don't think like that, but it'll work. It's wheat and it's sugar.
It's boiling.
Yeah. So you wouldn't think, but you point out, you say, "Oh, that's disgusting." You know, why would you do this? But then you say, "No, it's these ingredients, the same ingredients." And then you go, "Oh, okay." So all you're trying to do is bring near. But in this case, by the Lord revealing, then you understand. So, by hearing from authority with faith, that's why it says if you hear in the proper way, it opened by the proper hearing. So that's why this example is used, because Narada is using the proper. He's a proper student, Brahmaji is the proper guru, so the teacher. So you have a perfect combination. You know, you don't get a better teacher than Brahma, right? He's known as, you know, the teacher of the universe. And you don't get a better student than Narada, right? Like that. So therefore, it's a perfect conversation to discuss.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Sarvabhuta Bhaktivedanta ki,
Jai
Jai Nitai Gaura.